All right. Good morning, everyone. So first of all, welcome back. Hopefully, it feels like a couple of years since we've had this shir. Hopefully, everyone had, I guess, a wonderful summer, uplifting Yamim Noraim. And Baruch Hashem, it's a great zuchus to be able to begin this shir again, to be able to, I'm not going to say begin, but to resume our journey through Sefer Tehillim. So I always like to begin every semester with the same. First of all, our shir this morning, this class is sponsored by the Goldenberg, Retches, and Nachman families in loving memory of Drezel Nechama Bas Chaim Edel and by Donna Walk in memory of her beloved mother, Debbie Saltzman, Devorah Bas Tzvi Hirsch. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, these neshamas will have an aliyah and the families in Nechama. So I always like to start off every semester. So those of you who are veterans already of the shir have heard me say this a number of times. But Tehillim is something that is very near and dear to us, all of us in different ways. So I think for most... Am I done? For most of us, so what Tehillim represents is a spiritual anchor in times of distress. That generally, again, for the Jew, if you ask, what does a Jew do in times of difficulty? So what do we do in times of difficulty? Wrong. Okay, that was a trick question. What you do in times of difficulty is you roll up your sleeves and you try to figure out what you could do to help your situation. Concurrently, while you're trying to help yourself, you could also say Tehillim. And furthermore, when you exhaust all of your ishtadlus, when you exhaust all of your possibilities, meaning I don't have a right to call on HaKadosh Baruch Hu to do his part until I could sufficiently say that I've done my own. But nevertheless, Tehillim is like a go-to place. When the Jew is in distress, when the Jew is having difficulty, be it personal struggles, national struggles, humanity struggles, Sefer Tehillim is often the address. Now, of course, the most amazing part of that is that if you ask most people, to sit down and translate a kapitel of Tehillim, and I include myself in this, it's almost impossible. So it's so fascinating that we find ourselves so connected to words that, to be honest, we don't really understand. Maybe someone like the Kapitlach that we see on a more regular basis, you know, like a Kuf Chaf Aleph, a Kuf Lamed, the Shir Malos, you know, those things, okay, they have an easier thing. We connect them. They're related to Yamim Noraim. But Stama Kapitel, you open up a Tehillim and you open it up and you try to translate it into English, it's virtually impossible. Now that, of course, is very much because it's poetry. Poetry in general is difficult to translate into another language. But there's something more. That Sefer Tehillim is perhaps one of the most profound Svarim we have in Tanakh. Obviously, the Chumash is from the Ribono Shel Olam, so that has a Kiddusha in and of itself. But Sefer Tehillim from Ksuvim, the words of David HaMelech, resonate, really ooze with an incredible profundity and meaning. So if remember again, when we're first introduced to David HaMelech, we're first introduced to how does the Navi describe David HaMelech? It describes him as Tov Ro'i, he's handsome, he's Admoni, he is a ruddy complexion, Tatolim, he has curls, and Yefe'enayim, he has beautiful eyes. And we've commented many times that beautiful eyes are usually used throughout Tanakh in reference to a feminine quality. Women are described by their eyes. Men are generally not described by their eyes. The first time we find the woman described by her eyes is where? Leah Imenu. And remember, we've learned in the past, interestingly enough, when the Torah says that Eine Leah Rakos, the eyes of Leah were soft, so we're all conditioned like Rashi. So Rashi understands that to be a lack of beauty. Rashi understands that to mean, again, that Leah was always crying because people said she's going to marry Esav, and therefore her eyes were puffy. In Iraq, they were soft. But Rashi is pretty much the only commentary who learns that way. All of the other commentaries understand that Eine Leah Rakos means, yes, Rachel was Yifas Tari Yifasmar. Rachel was exquisitely beautiful. But Leah Imenu had an element of beauty that her sister did not have. An element of exquisite beauty, namely, her eyes. Her eyes. And we know, again, there's a famous phrase that we all know, the eyes are the windows to the soul, which comes, I think, from Leah Imenu. The Torah is telling us that there's something exceptionally profound about this woman. There is something exceptionally profound. There is more than meets the eye. And we know, you know, Rachel Imenu, of course, is the Rachel Mavaka al Baneha. She's the paradigmatic mother. But you understand that Rachel is the mother of Yosef and Binyamin. Leah is the mother of everyone else. Malchus, monarchy, comes from Leah. Kahuna, Leviah, teachers, Sofim, everyone comes from Leah Imenu. Leah Imenu was a woman of immeasurable strength. What she had to go through in her personal life and yet still persevere, knowing living life in a second-tier status, her perception as a second-tier status, and ultimately still forging ahead, represents incredible strength. And she endowed that strength ultimately again to even her great-great-great-grandson, a young boy by the name of David, who when we are first introduced to him, the Navi tells us he has yefeh einayim. Why are you telling me that? Who cares? I need to know that he has nice eyes. The Navi is coming to tell us, not that he has nice eyes. He has the Baba's eyes. He has Leah Imenu's eyes. He has that profundity. He has that multi-tiered, multi-layered personality. That when you see David HaMelech, you know, everyone paints, you know, whenever you see like the paintings of David, like at the Tehillim, so you always see David HaMelech with what? With a heart. Such a strange thing. You know, if you're going to draw David HaMelech with anything in his hand, it would have been a sword. David HaMelech, I guarantee you, spent very little time playing the harp. I don't even know if he knew how to play the harp. Right? But he spent, even if he did, he spent very little time, maybe in his youth when he's a shepherd in the field. Most of his life is spent with a sword. Most of his life is spent waging incredible battles. Personal battles, battles against external enemies, battles against internal enemies. That's David HaMelech. So when you meet this young boy, he has beautiful eyes telling us that there is so much more than meets the eye with this young man. And as such, when it comes to Tehillim, we are drawn to these words that we often don't even understand. Why? Because even if my mind can't translate the words, my heart, my soul knows that there is something exceptionally profound unfolding in every single kapitel. That is the power of Tehillim. That's why generations of Jews who didn't have the foggiest idea as to what David HaMelech was talking about. You know, we live in such a different age. You know, after 120, when we go up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each of us has to give an accounting for our lives. And for our generation, you know, the threshold is going to be much higher. Because the truth is, we don't live with the persecution, Baruch Hashem, of previous generations. We don't live with the need, you know, that previous generations had between choosing between career and Shmiras HaMitzvos. We don't have that anymore. We have no excuse for not learning. Because even if you can't read a word of Hebrew, right, you could learn, you could finish Shas, you could learn the entire Torah, you could learn everything. Even if a person has absolutely no Hebraic or Aramaic skills. So it's an amazing thing that for generations, people were tethered to Tehillim. Even though they didn't have an art scroll, they didn't have a translation, they didn't know what it meant. But they were drawn to the eyes of David HaMelech. They were drawn to the profundity, they were drawn to the meaning. So part of what we're going to try to accomplish in our shir throughout this semester. I know, semester doesn't sound right. You can't learn Tehillim in a semester. Zman. Right? So what we're going to go ahead and accomplish over the duration of the next number of classes is to try to understand, of course, the stated meaning of the kapitel, but also try to look into the eyes of David HaMelech. To try to look into the eyes and to understand what's unfolding over here. So we're picking up with Kapitel Nun Gimel 53. We're just going in order. So the kapitel begins. Lamnatzeach amachalas maskil leDavid. So lamnatzeach again means to the conductor. So remember, again, we've discussed many times, David HaMelech more than anything wanted to what? Build the Beis HaMikdash. David HaMelech wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash more than anything. The Ribono Sha'olam tells him it is not to be for a variety of different reasons. He was a warrior. Beis HaMikdash has to be built in a time of Shalom. There might be some residual impact from the episode with Bathsheba, which we discussed extensively. A number of different reasons. The point is, David HaMelech is not going to build it. He's privileged to purchase the property, right? The threshing floor from Aravna HaYevusi. He's privileged to go ahead and purchase the future site of the Beis HaMikdash. And the other thing he does is he composes the music for the Levitic choir. So ultimately, again, Tehillim, David HaMelech wrote, yes, as supplications, but also as the musical compositions for the Levitic choir. So Lamnatzeach to the conductor is like the cue to the head of the Levitic choir. Amachalas maskil leDavid. We're going to leave that phrase undefined for right now. Amar naval belibo. The fool said in his heart, Ein Elokim hishchisovis iva avel ino setov. So the fool says, there is no God. They have dealt corruptly. They have committed abominable justice. No one does good. God looked down from heaven upon the sons of men to see whether there is a man of understanding who seeks God. Yet, this is now in Pasuk number 4. They are all dross. Together they have spoiled. No one does good, not even one. Pasuk Hey, Yodu Pale, Hello Yodu Pale, Aven Ochli Ami, Ochlu Lechem Elokim Lo Karo. Did not the workers of iniquity know? Those who have devoured my people partook of a feast. They did not call upon the Lord. Pasuk Vav, Sham Pachad Du Pachad, Lo Haya Pachad Ki Elokim Pizar Atzmos Chonech, Hevi Shosa Ki Elokim Asam Mitin Mitzion Yishuos Yisrael, Peshuv Elokim Shavus Amo Yagel Yaakov Yismach Yisrael. Oh, that salvations of Israel would come out of Zion. When God returns the captivity of his people, Jacob will rejoice, Israel will be glad. What's the theme of this capital? What's the basic theme? Now again, I'm just giving you the overview now. The basic theme, as is expressed by Rav Hirsch in number 2, Rav Hirsch says, look at the second line in paragraph A, like Psalm 14, Psalm 53, speaks of an era of widespread spiritual and moral degeneration. Now, there's good news and bad news. The good news, the bad news is, at the time, the capital speaks about the period of moral degeneration. The good news is, it's not talking about us. It's not talking about Klal Yisrael. It's talking about the world. It's talking about the world. In the midst of an utterly godless world, Israel is the sole nation that by virtue of its way of life still stands out as the people of God. And its history shines forth as a memorial and as a visible sign of the hand of God in the history of the world. Israel fulfills its destiny by the fact that its survival in the midst of a hostile environment demonstrates the presence of God's sovereignty on earth. But the Lord who preserved Israel, even in exile, is the same God from whom Israel may expect its eventual redemption. Skip down to paragraph B. The superscription, so according to Rav Hirsch, the theme of this capital, and the truth is, you can see it pretty much in the words, David HaMelech is lamenting the fact that mankind will suffer periods of moral degeneration. There'll be no goodness in the world. Man will take advantage of his fellow man, but in the midst of all of that, Klal Yisrael, we remain true to our Judaic virtues, we remain true to our Judaic ideas and ideals. Now Rav Hirsch goes back and he says, this is the opening of the capital. The superscription Al Machalas would be quite appropriate to this theme. The smichus that nismach usually lends the word so skip down. Hence, machalas denotes the moral sickening of all men and human affairs. It's widespread infirmity. So if you go back to now number 1 for just a moment. So David HaMelech is saying, Lanatzeach, this capital is speaking about a machalas maskil David. Speaking about time, machalas means what? From a lashon, from a wording of? Chole. David HaMelech is speaking about a time where humanity will be ill, where humanity will be stricken by sickness. Not physical sickness, but a moral sickness. David HaMelech says there will come a time ultimately again where humanity will be stricken with sickness, but yet despite all of that, Klal Yisrael will still shine forth as the beacon of morality, as the beacon of true ideas and ideals. Beautiful. So if you look at number 3, so the Mefarshim are all struck by 2 words that appear in this capital. So Lanatzeach, we understand. But what is this Machalas and Maskil LeDavid? So Maskil we've seen before. So Rav Hirsch helps us with Machalas. In his understanding from Lashon of Choli, Lashon of Chola, a sickness, talking about a period of moral degeneration. Mitzudas David says Machalas is Shem Kli Nigun. Now, the Mitzudas David, this is generally his approach. He understands that anytime you're going to see Lanatzeach, means that there's a message to the conductor, right? David HaMelech is saying, conductor of the Levitic choir, here's your Shira. So what David HaMelech will often do is, he will tell the conductor which instrument to use for this particular capital. So according to the Mitzudas David, Machalas is the name of an instrument. What kind of instrument? I don't know. David HaMelech must have known. I guess the conductor of the Levitic choir must have known. And ultimately, again, David HaMelech is telling you, not only should you sing this, but use this particular instrument. What about Maskil? So number 4, the Mitzudas David says, Maskil Ha'omer Beheskel Rav. Now this is exceptionally important. Anytime we see Maskil, this is not the only capital. We've seen Maskil before, we'll see Maskil again. Maskil, that word, is from Lashon of Seichel. So the idea that David HaMelech says, you know, it's like any teacher. Every piece of information is important, but some pieces of information are exceptionally important. So David HaMelech tells us, everything I'm going to tell you in 150 chapters of Tehillim is important, but there are certain things that are super important. There are certain things that mamash you have to be especially attentive to. Whenever you see maskil, whenever you see that word, the Mitzudas David said, Ha'amar beheskel rav. There's a lot of thought that went into this capital. There are important ideas that are expressed in this capital. And for our purpose, what David HaMelech is telling us is there's something life-altering in this capital. There is some yesod, there's some idea, there's some concept that is comprehensively cathartic, that if we learn it and we internalize it, changes the way we live and ultimately changes the people we are. So now that the Mitzudas David whet our appetite with that, let's figure out what that is. So remember, approach number one for the capital is Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch, that the David HaMelech is sending this in historical context, or I should say in the future context, there will be a time of moral degeneration where again, humanity will be sick. Humanity will be ill. But even in those times, Klal Yisrael retains the ability to rise above the rest. But now take a look at number five. The Medrash Tehillim advances a dramatic interpretation with which we're going to spend the remainder of our time today. So look at number five. L'Matzeach HaMachalas Maskil David. Zeh She'amar HaKosev. This kapitel echoes the sentiment that is echoed in Mishlei, written by Shlomo HaMelech. What does Shlomo HaMelech say? Matza Isha Matza Tov. If a man finds a good wife, he has found good. Now, by the way, you know, whenever Chazal express things, when a man finds a wife, the converse is true as well. If a woman finds a husband, she finds good. So the idea, matza isha matza tov. A man finds a good woman, he finds tov. Ein sof li isha tova. Ein sof, it's actually a very beautiful idea. Ein sof li isha tova means there is no measurement. There is no way to measure the incredible bracha that a man feels when he finds a good wife. Ukashem she'ein sof le'isha tova, and the same way that there's a feeling of boundless blessing when one finds a good wife, kach ein sof le'isha ra'a. So too, there is no end to the terrible nature of life when one has a bad wife. Now, by the way, a bad wife doesn't mean a bad woman. What it's referring to over here is a bad marriage. Yeah. So we know, unfortunately, we don't need Shlomo HaMelech to tell us this. A person can have all of the brachas in the world, right? But if a person is locked in a loveless, shalomless marriage, so all the brachas in the world mean nothing. Conversely, if a person has shalom bayis, a person has a happy, fulfilling life, a happy, fulfilling marriage, even if they don't have every single thing that they want, Baruch Hashem, they feel rich. Shene emar, umotse ani mar mimaves es ha'isha. So Shalom Aleich writes in Koheles, I have found something more bitter than death, a woman. So now, let me be clear on this. So understand, you know, people love to say, oh, you see, Judaism is misogynistic, it hates women. Stupidity. The Rebbe Shalom loves everyone. We love women. We love men. We love everyone. What Shlomo HaMelech was saying, Shlomo HaMelech speaking from the heart. Shlomo HaMelech is saying, listen, I have everything. I'm Shlomo HaMelech. I have everything. I possess every single material thing. And I want to tell you, I have some really bad marriages. Remember, Shlomo HaMelech had quite a number of them. So I have some really bad marriages. And I just want to tell you something. The bad marriages, it's worse than death. It's worse than death, which makes sense because essentially, you're dying a slow death each and every day, as opposed to just death, which occurs once. So these are the two extremes. A person is in a good, happy, fulfilling marriage. There's nothing better. Like Shlomo HaMelech says, Matza Isha, Matza Tov. If you found a good marriage, then you have everything. On the other hand, Chas V'Shalom, if it's negative, Motza Ani Mar Mimavas. I found something more bitter, more horrific, more terrifying than death, and that's being locked. That's being locked in a dead-end relationship. So watch this. What does this have to do with our capital? Amar Rav Shmuel, Tova Haisa Avigayil L'David. Avigayil, we'll discuss Avigayil in just a little bit, was good for David. Mikala Kabana Sheba Olam. Avigayil was more beneficial to David HaMelech than all of the Kabanos which would be offered in the Beis HaMikdash. Remember again that David HaMelech gets credit for the karbanos that were offered up in the Beis HaMikdash, because A, he secured the land, B, he went ahead and wanted very much to build it. See, he gets the credit. But the Medrash says more than all of the karbanos that would be offered up in the Beis HaMikdash, that would be built by David's son, David HaMelech got more benefit from Avigail. What does that mean? For had David HaMelech done what he wanted to do to Naval, had he offered up all of the karbanos in the world, he would not have had atonement. She came to him and she saved him. Havi lam natseach al machalas. This is the meaning of the capital, a song of machalas, shemachla lo. That Abigail allowed David to attain forgiveness. Really, she allowed him to attain proactive forgiveness. She allowed him ultimately not to sin. Kishem shar kabanos mochalin. The same way that offerings, that sacrifices, affect atonement, Abigail was able to affect proactive atonement for David HaMelech. What does this mean? Yeah. So we're going to do a little bit of a crash course in Navi. Good, I'm not going to leave you holding, hanging, I promise. Yeah. So we're going to go through this a little bit. I apologize, I'm having some computer problems. That's why there's no English on here. But I'm here, so don't worry. We'll go through it together. So let's start number six. We're going to go through this relatively quickly and a lot of it outside. Navi and Shmuel Aleph Perichafei. We're getting towards the end of Shmuel Aleph. Vayama Shmuel vayikpetsu kol Yisrael vayispedulo vayikriru babei sabarama. So Shmuel HaNavi dies. Now understand, what happens before Shmuel HaNavi dies? Shmuel HaNavi wasn't an old... How old was Shmuel HaNavi when he died? He was 55, either... 50, 52, or 55. Three different opinions as to the death of... Either way, he's a young man. He's a young man. He looked much older because he aged because of his difficulties in life, but he was a young man. Now understand what's happening in Klal Yisrael. At this point in time, Shmuel has told Shaul, God no longer wants you to be king. Right? You messed up with Amalek. God no longer wants you. And after that, Shmuel goes ahead and anoints David, who just happens to be the king's son-in-law, Shaul's son-in-law. Shaul refuses to abdicate the throne and pursues David. While Shmuel is alive, Shaul is somewhat restrained in his pursuit of David, because he realizes he can't pursue David publicly, because A, he doesn't want to start civil war, B, he doesn't want to upset the Navi. Shmuel, of course, knows everything that's going on, but Shmuel HaNavi's been through a lot, and so he doesn't really have the energy, the koach, to be able to fight this battle. When Shmuel dies, Shaul no longer feels restrained. Shaul marshals all of the forces of Klal Yisrael to pursue David HaMelech. David HaMelech will not fight Shaul. He will not fight his father-in-law.
Shaul didn't know he just had something.
Shaul knew. And again, people, not the general populace, it doesn't seem like they knew. But as time went on, more people began to understand what was unfolding over here. So David HaMelech will not fight his father-in-law. He will not fight. He won't fight his father-in-law because he won't lift up a sword against another Jew. He also will not cause civil war in Klal Yisrael. So he decides to run. So that's what the Navi discusses over here. So Vaish b'ma'onu ma'aseh b'karmel, Vaish gadol ma'od v'lotzon shloshes alafim v'elav izim. So listen to this. David HaMelech is with a ragtag group of soldiers. Who are the people who joined David HaMelech? Who are the people who joined him? So you have to understand something. There's always a group of people who are looking for a fight. It doesn't matter what the cause is. There always, and by the way, lest you think this is a historical thing, go into any shul. Right? There's always a group of people. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be the kugel, it could be the davening, it could be the drasha. There's always a group who's ready to fight. It's okay. Some people do it with their mouth. Some people do it with swords. So David HaMelech has, I'm not going to call them, they're not exactly like a group of tzaddikim. But nevertheless, they are the people who band around him, and they're the people willing to protect him. He comes across a guy by the name of Naval. Naval is a very wealthy individual. Now remember, because David is fleeing, and because David is not broadcasting that he is the king of Israel, he has no supplies. So everywhere he goes, he has to restock. Everywhere he goes, so he comes to Naval. What happens? Paragraph number 7. So what happens? So David says to some of his guys, listen, go to Naval. Tell Naval We need, don't give him background, meaning don't give him too much information that we're on the run from the king. Just tell him we're on a mission and we need supplies. What does Naval say? Number 7, Pasuk, good. Vayan ya, ya, Naval Avdei David. Fayumer, me David, umi ben yishahayom, rabu avadim aspartim, ish mitnei adonav. So essentially Naval says, who does this guy think he is? He speaks very disparagingly about David. Now understand, even if you don't know that David is the anointed king, David is the son-in-law of the king, and he is, or he was, one of the ranking generals within Klal Yisrael. Now at this point in time, the rupture between father-in-law and son-in-law becomes a little bit more well-known, so Naval feels free to speak his mind. Essentially he says, who is this guy? What a chutzpah. You show up in my house and I should give you my sheep and I should give you my wine and I should give you my wheat and I should give you my bread. I'm not giving you anything. So what happens? Number 8. So they come back to David. Lads come back to David. Say, David, Naval, not only did he flatly refuse your request, but what? But he was disparaging and he was disrespectful in the way he spoke about you. Number 8. So what happens? So they decide, David says, everybody get your sword, we're going to kill Naval. Now again, what right does David have to kill Naval? David is the king. David is the king. When the king says something, you listen. You know, I often think, you know, when Mashiach comes, there's going to be a restoration of Davidic monarchy. And I often wonder, are we really going to be ready for monarchy? Because literally, when the king says something, there's no like, I hear what you're saying, but let me think about it. Right? Or let's convene a committee. Or let's take it to the board. You know, there's none of that. The king is a government of one. Okay, obviously there's a Sanhedrin, there are other things, but it's an incredible authority model that we just are so not used to. In any event, David HaMelech says, we're going to kill Naval. Gets the 400 men, everybody takes their sword. Ula Avigail Ishes Naval, Higid Nar Echamera. So what happens? Naval has a wife, a woman, a virtuous woman by the name of Avigail. And Avigail is told what is happening. She's told about what Naval did, and now she's told that David is coming with his men to kill Naval. Paragraph 9. Source 9. Vatimar Avigail vatikach masayim lechem ushnaim nivleyayim v'chamesh tzon asuyas v'chameshim kali umea tzimukim masayim duvelim vasasim achalamorim. So what happens? Avigail gathers up supplies, you can see a large amount of food, and she sets off towards David HaMelech. Number 10. Vatir Avigail as David vatimar vatir me'alachamar vatipa la'apei David alpana vatishtachu aretz. So Avigail meets up with David and she gives some incredible respect. She comes off her donkey, she prostrates in front of him. Vatipo aragla vator biadoni haavon. Excuse me, biadoni haavon. Vatidaberna amascha baazanecha ushmas tibre amasecha. So first thing she does is she says, "I'm so sorry for what happened. What occurred was my fault. What occurred was my fault. Why? Al no yasim adoni yaslibo ala isha bili alaze al novo." Ki kishmo kenhu. Now this again is so tragic in and of itself. Avigail herself is obviously locked in an unhealthy marriage. So she says, this man, my husband, Naval. Now again, the name Naval, it's not very high on baby naming lists. Right? Naval means what? Right? Naval means, it can mean a number of different things. It can mean a glutton, right? But it really means a base person, like a Naval Bishus HaTorah, right? Is a base person. A person without real morals, a person without real ideals. So literally, Avigail says, Kishmo Kenhu. My husband's name says it all. It says it all. He is a base individual. I'm sorry. She says, that's why I normally take care of the Hachnesas Orchim side of things. Right? I normally run the spiritual sides of my home. I'm sure Naval had some redeeming qualities. But again, you see how Avigail speaks about her own. Now again, it's possible that what she's also doing is playing this up a little bit so that David will spare him. But essentially what she does is she takes responsibility for the events upon herself. And she says, please, my master, do not kill him. Do not kill him. She says, here, I brought you plenty of supplies. Please forgive my husband. Forgive my mistake. Again, she's taking responsibility for the mistake, but she implores David HaMelech, please, please, do not raise your hand against my husband. Do not shed this blood. The Ribbono Shel Olam wages all of your battles on your behalf, and I have no doubt that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow you to be successful and will allow you to find bracha in the future. Number 11. V'hayo. Kiyasa Hashem la'adoni kecholasher diber es hatova alecha v'tzivcha lenagid al Yisrael. And ultimately, again, so Abigail says, and please, my master, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu in fact does visit all of this blessing upon you, as I'm sure He will, v'tzivcha lenagid al Yisrael, which is an amazing statement. What does she say? You will become king. So, meaning again, so obviously people know about this. People understand what's going on over here. And the writing's on the wall that Sheol is unfortunately in a downward spiral. David is in an upward ascent. And so she says, my master, one day you will become king. Do not let this event be a stumbling block for you. Less, we're going to define all of these statements in just a moment. Don't go ahead and spill blood for nothing. And if my master, meaning she's speaking to David, if you resist the impulse to take revenge on Naval, if you resist the impulse to kill him, I have no doubt ve'hitiv Hashem la'adoni. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do great things for you. Ve'zacharta es amasecha. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does do great things for you, I would ask that you please remember your maidservant. Number 12, David HaMelech says, Vayomer David la'Avigayil, Baruch Hashem Elokei Yisrael, Asher Shelacheich Hayom Hazeh Likrasi. Baruch Hashem, that the Ribbono Shel Olam sent you to me on this day. Ubaruch Ta'ameich, you write, blessed be your reasoning. David HaMelech said to her, you're a very compelling young woman, right? You, what you said makes absolute sense. Ubarucha at asher kilisani hayom mibo badamim. And thank you for saving me today from shedding blood. Vosheh yadili. And thank you ultimately again for providing a salvation for me. Okay. That's not the end of the story, but pause here for just a moment. The Gemara fills in the rest of this narrative. So take a look at number 13. This is the Gemara Maseches Megillah that discusses the seven Nevios, the seven prophetesses and the seven great women, amongst whom was Avigail. So he says over here, "D'chsev v'hayohi rocheves al hachamor v'yarat v'seisar." So I skipped this pasuk. But the pasuk says Abigail's riding on the donkey. Beirat b'seisar, she descended b'seisar hahar. B'seisar literally means what? The hidden or secret part of the mountain. So what does that mean? B'seisar hahar, haminahar mibaleh. Why does it mean the hidden part of the mountain? Why not just the mountain? So the Gemara explains that there is more to this narrative. Amar Rav Bar Shmuel, al iske dam haba minastarim, not la dam v'arasalo. So again, it's a metaphor. Yarata b'seisa refers to blood that comes from the hidden places. She asked David HaMelech anida shayla. She asked David HaMelech anida shayla. So what happens? Amrala v'chi marin dam balayla. David HaMelech says, I can't answer this shayla for you because we don't paskin on maros. We don't paskin on nida shaylas at night. At night, you need sunlight. You need daylight. Amra. So what does she say to him? V'chi donin dinin nefashos balayla. So tell me, my king, if you can't go ahead and paskin nida shaylas at night, can you paskin capital cases at night? So she was, and we're going to discuss this, what she was saying, if you can't paskin nida shaylas at night, and obviously, it's really apples and oranges, it's for two different, but the point that she was making is, if you need clarity to be able to rule on a nida question, then of course you need clarity to be able to rule on a capital case. Amrala, David responds, it's different. Morid b'malchusu. Naval has rebelled against the monarchy. I am the king. He said no to me, and therefore he's deserving of death. So what does Abigail say? And therefore, again, when you're morid b'malchus, the king has the right to just execute you. There is no judge, there's no jury, there's no trial, there's nothing. I don't have to wait till daytime. He is morid b'malchus, I could execute him. Amrullah, so she says to him, Amrullah, adayin sha'ol kayim. I just want to mention that Sha'ol's still alive. There is another king sitting on the throne. V'lo yatsa tiv'acha ba'olam. And ultimately, again, your reputation has not become known in the world. So, first of all, before we even go on, there's an incredible lesson over here. Abigail, I think, captures part of the ability of being a strong wife. Now, I'm not going to tell anybody how to be a strong wife. I'm not qualified to teach that. And don't tell my wife that I'm saying this. But ultimately, sometimes, this is a very important din in Shalom Bayis. It could happen that sometimes a husband does something wrong. So one thing, it could happen. Sometimes people think that the way to get people to be better is to put them down. It's to put them down. I'm going to point out to you every single thing you've done wrong and how you did wrong, alphabetical order, numerical order, chronological order, and I'm going to explain to you exactly why you're such a mess up and why you're such a terrible person, with the thought that if I point out to my significant other how terrible they are, that's going to be the impetus and the fuel for change. So understand something. If you make someone feel like a shmata, if you make someone feel like a nothing, if you make someone feel like they are a mess up, that they've failed you and disappointed you in terrible ways, they will not change. Because instead what a person says is, okay, I guess I'm a mess up. I guess I'm a failure. No one ever said, wow, my wife thinks I'm a failure. I really should become a better husband. Instead, what usually happens is if my wife, whose opinion is the most important thing to me in the world, thinks I'm a failure, then wow, there's absolutely no hope for me. So I guess I'm good at messing up. I might as well become, everybody's got to be proficient in something. So I might as well become proficient in that, because I'm never going to be good at anything else. It's such an incredible yisod. And by the way, it's not just true in marriage. It's true with children. It's true in any relationship. When you want people to grow, never knock them down. Because if you knock them down, they will never grow. They will just stay down and sink lower and lower and lower. Instead, if somebody's made a mistake and you want them to improve, you build them up. You build them up. You say, listen, what you did hurt me, what you did upset me, and I love you so much, and you're so wonderful, and you do this, and you do this, and you do this. You know, could we work together on addressing this? What does Abigail do? Amazingly enough, Abigail comes along, and what she does is, she never says to David, what you're doing is wrong. She never says to him, how can you possibly, and we'll see there's more to this narrative, how can you possibly entertain the idea of killing Nabal for not giving you, instead, what does she do? She eases into it. She asks, you can't answer the Nida Shaila. Well, maybe if you can't answer the Nida Shaila, maybe it's not such a great idea to paskin on capital cases, right? And then what happens? Ah, you're the king. I know you're the king, but just you should consider, that's always a good phrase. Perhaps you should consider that there's another king sitting on the throne. Perhaps you just contemplate being a strong woman, being a strong person, does not mean throwing your weight around and knocking other people down. Being a strong person means knowing that to get what you want out of life is much easier when you build people up. Because when you build them up, they then become your partners. And the more you enfranchise and you engender partnership, then the more people you have working towards the same goal. That's the greatness of Abigail. She goes on. Watch this. It's not over. So the Gemara says the following. Number 13, we are four lines in. Amar lo. So David says to Abigail, Ubaruch ta'amech, Ubaruch ha'at kelisani ayom mibo da'bedam. David says, blessed are you, Abigail. You prevented me from shedding blood. Thank you for preventing me from making such a catastrophic mistake. So here's what's interesting. The Gemara says, domim tarti mashma. The story is about to get much more intriguing. So domim means two bloods, meaning plural. You prevented me from shedding blood, plural. Why two blood? Ela malamed shegilsa es shoka. Rather, the Gemara says, Abigail's leg was revealed. Now, why was her leg revealed? So in number 14, the Arba Benel quotes that when she was getting off the donkey, her leg was revealed. As she was getting off the donkey, halach la'ora shalosh parsel. So literally what it means is, her skin was so luminescent that it lit up an area of 300 parsels. Hyperbole to speak out the idea that Abigail was exceptionally beautiful. David HaMelech was taken by her beauty. Amar lo, hashmi'i li. David HaMelech says to her, I want you to be with me. Amar lo, lo tehizos l'chalavuka. Now we'll discuss, by the way, what a strange conversation between David HaMelech and Abigail. We'll discuss this connection in just a moment. So what does Abigail say? This is amazing. Same thing. Lo tia zos l'fuka. Do not let this be a stumbling block for you. So what does she say to him? It's an amazing, amazing thing. She doesn't say, you Russia, you Minuvel, right? What does she say to him? She says, don't let this be a stumbling block. David, you're getting wrapped up. You're getting wrapped up in the passion of the moment. But understand, the passion will subside, and then you will have to deal with the ripple effects. You'll have to do with the, we'll have to deal with the results of your actions. Don't do this. Don't do this. Lo si ezos tefuka. Do not let this be a stumbling block to you. Zos mechlal v'ikach risi. So the Gemara says over here that again, Abigail said certain things of prophetic import without even realizing that she was prophesying. This shouldn't be a stumbling block, which indicates to us that David HaMelech would trip over another stumbling block. Umaynihu, what would it be? Maisa de Batsheva. Umaskana hachiyavi. V'haisa nafsha adun etzirub. Fine. So if you skip a little bit to 14 days. So, just want to take this as an aside, because this is a very strange exchange between David and Abigail. So, I saw this is such a beautiful insight. This is number 14, paragraph base, in the Baal Shevet Musar. So, quotes from the Medrash Tapios, Kasev Levar, Disa Bistram, that this is exceptionally esoteric, we're going to read it, then we're going to move on. Shavigayo, Haisa Mishoresh Chava, V'David, Haya Mishoresh Adam Harishon. So, amazingly enough, there are certain unions that are of incredible intensity. Amazingly enough, David HaMelech has not one, but two of these type of unions. Two of the women who were most pivotal in David HaMelech's life, Abigail and Bathsheba, both come into his life in a variety of, we'll call it, strange circumstances. Yet again, it's clear that there was a pre-existing bond between these individuals. So the Shevet Musar says that Abigail is Mishoresh, Abigail is Mishoresh Chava. What Mishoresh means doesn't mean that she's a Gilgul of Chava, doesn't mean that ultimately, again, she's a Nitzot. You know, again, we have 600,000 Neshamos in Klal Yisrael. But Baruch Hashem, there are many more than 600,000 Jews. There are 600,000 root souls. Root souls. And therefore, again, each of those roots have branches. That's why you see about the concept of Bashert. So what does Bashert mean? Bashert means two people who come from the same root soul. There's a connection between their souls at the root. So whether this means that Abigail was part of the root of Chava, she was a Gilgal of Chava, David was a Gilgal of Adam, part of the root of Adam, the point is that there is a chibur, there is a connection between these two people. And so when David HaMelech meets her for the first time, it's not just simply a physical attraction, which obviously was present as well, but it's some type of spiritual pull towards her as well. So skip down a little bit. Paragraph 15. Number 15, I'm sorry. So watch this. Amar la Abigail la Adonia David. Excuse me. Amar la Abigail la David. Adonia Melech. So the Medrash now continues. This Medrash is the continuation of what we started in number 5. So Abigail says to David, Adonia Melech, in ba'adin hazeh elecha, ma'ata osa. So interesting. So Abigail says to David, David, tell me, if the following question, the following case came before you, how would you paskin? Imagine the following situation. A pauper comes to a rich man, and he says to the rich man, give me a loaf of bread. And the rich man says, no. And the pauper kills the rich man for not having given him bread. So David, tell me, if this case came before you to be adjudicated, what would you say? What would you say? How would you paskin? So Abigail was saying to David, listen, I understand you're the king, but you're not yet fully the king. And you understand that to kill him because he denied you bread, because he denied you supplies, maybe it's within your right to do so. But it's not right to do so. In other words, maybe it's within your right, but it's not right. Don't do this. Don't do this. Don't become that kind of person. Don't become the kind of person, ultimately, again, who is willing to resort to excessive force, even to settle the most petty of accounts. She goes on, Shekeinu omer velo tiezos l'chalafuka, al tefakfik bepicha, al tomer b'shil sha'at ha-melech, ein adam ochanu. So now, if we skip the rest, we understand. Now let's go back to number 5 for just a moment. So now, remember the Medrash says, we begin to understand, what's this kapitel talking about? Lam naseach. David HaMelech goes ahead and sings a song. Al Machalas. So remember again, according to the Medrash Shilim, who does Machalas represent? Machalas represents Abigail. Represents Abigail. Represents ultimately again that Abigail was able to go ahead and achieve for David Mechila. David HaMelech was about to commit the sin, and according to the Gemara, potentially two Averos. One with Nabal, one with Abigail. And Abigail, in her wisdom, was able to prevent David from making a mistake. And now we understand the entire first pasuk. Lamaseach, this song is al machalas, about the episode ultimately again, where Abigail was able to achieve forgiveness for David, maskil, through using incredible seichel. Abigail, in her incredible wisdom, was able to go ahead and prevent David HaMelech from making two mistakes. And by the way, now the rest of the capital fits in as well, because what does David HaMelech speak about in the rest of the capital? The moral degeneration of humanity. And what is David HaMelech essentially saying? What is he saying? That could have been me. That could have been me, were it not for a wonderful, pious, beautiful, inside and out woman who stepped in at the right time, I would have been just like everyone else. So I sing this song dedicated to Amachalas, to the woman who achieved atonement for me, Abigail Maskil. Ultimately, again, she allowed me to remain David. She allowed me to remain Melech Yisrael. She allowed me to remain father of the Messianic line because she dealt with me with Seichel. Because at the end of the day, she brought her intuition, her understanding to bear and prevented me from sinning. So we learn, again, but we're going to take this one step further. So first of all, if we had more time, there's so much more to say on all of these pieces. I just want to point out something amazing about the humility of David HaMelech. You know, most of us, when we make mistakes, or when we are about to make mistakes, especially significant mistakes, with morality, immorality, we're generally not advertising, you know, I almost committed that act of immorality, but Baruch Hashem, I was saved, right? And rightfully so. You're not supposed to brag about, you're not supposed to speak about your averos, and you certainly shouldn't broadcast that you almost sinned, but were saved from sin. But the great humility of David HaMelech, because David HaMelech understands, he says to us, listen, we're all the same. David HaMelech is just like us. We're just like David HaMelech. There was David HaMelech because he chose to actualize his potential. But he's a baser v'adam. He's a human being just like the rest of us, with the same pushes, the same pulls, the same desires, all the different things that derail all of us from reaching our goals, from reaching our destiny, from reaching our finish line. David HaMelech contended with the rest of it. And what David HaMelech is saying is, I was privileged to surround myself with the right people. Or I was privileged that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put the right people in my life at the right time. That in that moment, where I was potentially going to make two mistakes, there was a woman who knew how to handle me. There was a woman who knew how to speak to me. There was a woman who knew how to navigate this situation with, on one hand, giving me mussar, but not destroying my ego. Helping me to avoid sin, but at the same time, not eroding my self-worth. So David HaMelech is teaching us a number of things. Number one, Pesach Chatas Roveitz, sin is everywhere. And no matter who you are, no matter what you are, no one is ever above temptation. This is a very important yesod in life. No, there's only one time when you are above and beyond temptation, and that is when you're dead. That's the only benefit of death. The only benefit of death is you never have to worry about the Yetzirah getting the best of you. So even if you're with your walker with the tennis balls on the bottom, there's still Yetzirah. There's still the capacity to sin. There's still the ability to make mistakes. It doesn't matter. There's never a point in time where if a person's breathing, the Yetzirah is there. You're David HaMelech, the Yetzirah is there. A person should never be overly confident about their ability that I vanquished the Yetzirah altogether. That's lesson number one. Lesson number two is to surround yourself with good people. To surround yourself with the right kind of people. And this is exceptionally important to Yisod. And to surround yourself with the right kind of people, you see, I always find this interesting. Sometimes someone needs to be spoken to, right? There's individuals doing something wrong, right? And they need to be told that what they're doing is wrong, right? Whatever the case is. And it always amazes me how none of the friends want to say anything. Let me just tell you something. If you're not willing to say something to someone in a loving, beautiful way when they're doing something wrong, then you're not a friend. You're an acquaintance. You're someone who knows them, but you're not a friend. Real friends care enough about the other that when they see someone doing something wrong, they point it out. And they have to be measured in the way you say it. You have to choose the right words. And if you are not an articulate person and you just kind of blurt out whatever comes to your mind, you're probably not the right person for the job. But Find the person who is. And it's important, on the flip side, to surround ourselves with the right kind of people. To surround ourselves with the people, first of all, again, always have friends who are a little firmer than you. Always have friends who are a little more pious than you. Always have friends who are a little bit better in the areas in which you are weak. Because if your friends are weaker than you in every single area, then you know you're the top lady on the totem pole, then there's no impetus for growth. But if you surround yourself with the right people, right friends and family and chaberim, make all the difference in life. Because sometimes when you're on the cusp of making the wrong decision, a loving, good, devoted friend will be there to tell you, this is not right, in the right way, in a way that preserves your sense of self. That was Abigail ultimately to David. And third lesson, of course, is the lesson we saw before, which is that the secret to being a strong spouse is never chas v'shalom squashing, but it's always building. The secret to ultimately being a successful spouse is figuring out, how do I build my significant other, even at times when they have messed up terribly? But there's one more lesson, and we're just going to use the remaining 8 minutes. Take a look at number 16. The story is not yet over. Vataba Abigail Navas. So what happens? Abigail goes home. Abigail goes home. All is good. Vihine lo mishteb bevesok mishtah hamelech. So what happens? So Naval is sitting there, and he's drinking his wine. V'leiv Naval tov alav. He's having a great time. V'ushikr ad ma'ot. And he's drunk. V'lo higida lo davar katan v'gadol ador aboker. And Abigail tells Naval nothing of what occurred. The next morning, again, the wine goes away. And Abigail tells Nabal everything that happened. Vayamas libo bikirbo. His heart died within him. Vehu haya le'evanim. He became stone. Now, what exactly does this mean? So again, it could be that he was angry. Some people, when they're angry, you know, do not yell and scream, but some people retreat inwards. So it could be that that's what's happening over here. Vayamas nava belibo bekirba means silent treatment. He just stopped talking. He just withdrew from the relationship. V'ayel evan, he became stone cold. What it really means on a deeper level is that Naval understood what he did wrong. And he also understood that there would be repercussions for what he did. But Naval was not a strong enough man to own his mistakes and to do tshuva. So instead what he does is, he just becomes like stone, emotionless, expressionless. Within 10 days later, Naval got sick and Naval died. Okay, that's the end of the Naval story. Number 17, Vayishma David Kimes Naval. David heard that Naval died. So what happens? And David said, Baruch Hashem. You know, Naval did something really terrible. And so I'm happy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu punished the wicked. Then he sends for Abigail. Vayidaber b'Avigail lekachto lo li'isha. Vayavo avdei David b'Avigail ha'karmela. Vayidaber elei le'mor. David shlachanu elayich lekachteich lo li'isha. David HaMelech sends word for you. He would like to marry you. Number 18. Vatimar vatakam Abigail vatirka v'alachamar. V'chamish narasel ochos le'agla v'telech achari malachi David v'atilo li'isha. Ultimately, again, Abigail marries David, and ultimately, again, the neshamas, the gilgulim of Adam and Chava are once again together in the Gan Eden of Yerushalayim. But I want to show you something amazing. In number 19, Rav Soloveitchik points out to her, just taking the Abigail theme a little bit further. Now that we understand what the kapitel is talking about, understand the pivotal role of Abigail. So Rav Soloveitchik here writes something amazing. In paragraph Aleph, Zu darka hachet me'azu me'olam. Hu tofes asa adam shushako b'lel hachet. The way sin works is that sin, averos, becomes like an all-encompassing endeavor. It overtakes you. Anan va'arathal mechasim asara p'nimi shabadim. Meaning, people are good. And usually when good people do bad things, it's because somehow I've convinced myself that what? That it's not so bad. Either that it's not so bad. If I'm really good, I could actually convince myself that it's a mitzvah, right? If I'm really, really good, I could convince myself that if I do it, I'm going to become even a greater tzaddik. So, but this is how it works. Meaning, we have, and we all do this. Every single one of us do this in some way or another. Because we're good people. I don't want to be a rasha. I don't want to be a sinner. So some way, somehow, I'm going to create my alternate reality and convince myself that what I'm doing is not so bad. Adam shorei b'chashchas hayitzarem v'afuf ba. A person could be surrounded, enveloped in the darkness of his yetzer, of his desires, and totally enveloped by the fog of his wants. What Rav is picking up on is, you know, when Abigail comes back home, so how does she find a novel? So the Navi calls him Shikr. He's Shikr. Lev Tov Alav. He is all happy. Why is he all happy? Because in his mind, he thinks he did the right thing. In his mind, he stood up to someone, right, who was going to try to take his stuff. I worked hard for this. I labored. I labored with incredible toil for this. So someone else is not going to come. You think you're the king. You're not. I stood my ground. I stood up. I feel pretty good about myself, right? I stood up for myself. See, he feels good about what it is that he's done. So what happens? Ba'os ha'shah shal shikar nachushim. Ba'av nichneses ba'balat avigayo. Hanosis imas besoras ha'kilyon ha'mara sheshamam b'hidavit. So amazingly enough, what happens? So the Rav understands that this story of Naval and Avigayo, of it being a literal story, is also a metaphor for the dynamic of sin. So when a person is sinning, when a person is enveloped in chet, they're like Naval, I'm drunk. I'm having a great time. Everything is great. I think I have such clarity of vision. Everything is perfect just the way I want it. And as I'm living it up, who walks in the door? His wife, right? Who walks in the door? Avigail. Avigail represents the voice of reason. Avigail represents the neshama. Avigail represents the Yetzer HaTov. And Avigail walks in and she sees that I'm having just the time of my life. I've made all the wrong decisions. I've done all of the wrong things. But I'm so enveloped in this cocoon of depravity, in this cocoon of wrong decisions, that I actually think that all the wrong decisions are right. I've lost my objectivity. I've lost my clarity. Avigail walks in. But amazingly enough, what does Avigail do when she walks in? What does she do? Nothing. Because Avigail understands that while I'm enveloped in the cocoon of my negative decisions and negative behaviors, I will not be receptive to her message. Paragraph base. He shama ala sod baliba. She waits. Avigail is patient. She waits. Ki eis ledaber ve'eis l'shtok. There's a time to speak and there's a time to be quiet. Yesh zman she'esha lahatit ba'musar. V'yesh zman she'bo'ein ledaber alachote shu shikr ad ma'ot. There's a time to give musar and there's a time to be quiet because the person is drunk with their lifestyle, drunk with their negative decisions. And anything Avigail has to say will not enter into the ears or into the heart of Naval. Paragraph Gimel. She says nothing to Naval. So Avagzira ala shichrus. So what happens? One thing is, you know, the amazing thing about drunkenness is comes to an end. At some point in time, all you're left with is a big headache, right? At some point in time, the drunkenness goes away, the feelings of elation go away, the darkness dissipates, the sun comes out, and reality hits you in the face. Va'az vahi boker b'tseis hayayin vayomas libo b'kirbo. In that moment of clarity, Avigail tells Naval the way it is. Avigail tells Naval about his mistakes. Avigail tells Naval about the false reality he's created for himself. Avigail tells Naval that what you've done is wrong, the decisions you made have been wrong. And unless you change it around, things are not going to go well for you. And what happens? Vayamas libo bekirbo. Naval's heart dies in his chest. Naval is overwhelmed by the enormity of the negativity engendered by his bad life decisions. Paragraph Dalet. Kilizos ladas, acharei kol chote, okeves Avigail. Ba'akvosa shel kol chet, karuch ansho. The Rav says that this episode with Naval and Avigail is just an incredible metaphor for life. So often we are the Naval who become drunk with our decisions that were bad, but at some point in time we just lose sight that they were bad. We get so caught up in it and we think we're doing everything correctly, I'm doing everything just as it should be. And Avigail, the Yetzer HaTov, walks in, she's not going to say anything because she realizes right now, I'm not going to listen. I'm not receptive to her message at all. But she knows the time will come when the alcohol of sin will wear off, where the sun will come up, and then she's going to tell me like it is. And in that moment when she tells me like it is, and I realize that I have made so many bad life decisions, vayamas libo bekirbo. There is an overwhelming feeling of pain, an overwhelming feeling of personal tragedy, an overwhelming feeling of, oh my gosh, what have I done? Take a look. a paragraph, hey, skip a little bit. But since I have a zoe mitchila liyaser v'lomar esadarma eila v'hiyodas eich lomar osam, and Avigal knows just how to phrase what needs to be said. We're just going to take 2 more minutes of your time. Ki az v'yamos liu v'kirbo az chash acholte lefesa ki Avigal machzika biyado ki lofefes also ki yizo ekis mibo. But he says thereof something amazing. You see, Naval, it didn't have to be this way. It didn't have to be this way. What could Naval have done? What could Naval have done? Naval could have taken the hand of his beloved Avigal and he said, could have said, help me. Help me. I messed up big time. I made major mistakes. Help me engage in some course correcting activity. In that moment, says the Rav, when I hear the voice of Avigal whisper in my ear that I've really made some significant mistakes, I have a decision to make at that crossroads. I could be a Naval, and I could stand my ground and pretend to remain indifferent to the voice of Avigal, withdraw, allow my heart to die inside of me, or I could choose to take decisive action to turn things around. Yes, I messed up, but if Avigal is speaking to me, that means I am not beyond salvation. If Avigal is speaking to me, that means there is still hope for me. That's the choice that a person makes in what the Rav calls that Avigal moment. And the Rav goes on to explain every Baal Tshuva. And by the way, when I say Baal Tshuva doesn't just refer to someone who didn't grow up from and then became from later on. Every single one of us is a Baal Tshuva. Because if you've done something wrong, which all of us have, then I'm supposed to do Tshuva. And hopefully if I do Tshuva correctly, I become a Baal Tshuva. Every Baal Tshuva, says the Rav, has that Avigal moment. That moment where I'm faced with the enormity of the mistakes I've made, the wrong decisions I've made. And sometimes, again, that Avigal moment can be overwhelming because sometimes it's my whole lifestyle is wrong. Sometimes it's just independent decisions that I've made wrong. Sometimes it's things that are irreversible that are wrong. Everyone has that Avigal moment. And what defines our character ultimately is how we react in that Avigal moment. Do we stand our ground? Do we just remain indifferent to her message? And ultimately, again, allow our hearts to die inside of us? Or do we decide to engage in comprehensive cathartic change? So if we bring it all together, and with this, go if you need, go ahead, don't be sorry, I'm going over my time. Hey, so again, so just if we tie it all together, it turns out that really, there are two voices of Avigal. Avigal speaks to us twice, and she sees us multiple times like, but she speaks to us situationally twice. The Rav refers to Avigal achar hachet. The Rav refers to Avigal after the sin, after I've messed up, after I've made some bad life decisions, after I've made some very poor choices. Avigal whispers in my ears and said, excuse me, I love you so much, but what the heck are you doing? I don't know if that's a direct quote, but you understand. What are you doing? What are you doing? Why are you doing this? You know better than this. You are better than this. You're so great. You're so special. You have so many kochos, so many abilities. Why are you squandering your time, your potential, and your resources? Baby, come on, let's get it together. So there's the voice of Avigal after the chet. That's what the Rav is referring to. David HaMelech is referring to the voice of Avigal when? We'll call it, it's the proactive voice of Avigal. That before I'm about to do something, Avigal whispers in my ear and she says, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure this is a good idea? Are you positive that when you do this action, when you engage in this activity, is that going to bring you closer or make you further from your ultimate goal in life? These are the two times that Avigal, that Yetzer HaTov, the Ribono Shel Olam whispers to each of us. Again, you have to be tuned into the right frequency to hear it. But it's before we act. Avigal, that voice tells us, measure your actions. Decide if this is a good idea. And by the way, it sounds overwhelming, but it's in every single thing we do in life. Every single action we take in life, before you speak, before you act, before you make life decisions, a person has to ask themselves a simple, this is the Avigal moment. Will this course of action bring me closer to my intended goal or distance me? And by the way, there's no such thing as a power of action. Everything either brings me closer or distances me. There is the voice of Avigal, what we'll call the pre-actional voice of Avigal, and then there is the post-actional voice of Avigal. That sometimes after I make the wrong decisions, the good news is, that Abigail's love is unconditional. That Ribbono Shel Olam's love is unconditional. Yetzer Tov's love is unconditional. So even if I make the wrong decisions, Abigail never says, well, I'm not talking to you anymore. Abigail never says, I'm giving you the silent treatment. That even after I go ahead and I make the wrong decisions in life, Abigail says, you know what you did. Let's figure out how to repair it, and let's figure out how to move on together. This is the Lam Natzeach. David HaMelech goes ahead and composes a Shira, Amachalas Maskil LeDavid. David HaMelech says, there are many times, before I sinned, I was able to save myself. Others were able to save me by talking it out and asking myself, is this really something I want to do? And unfortunately, after those times that I did sin, that same voice came back and gave me the chizuk to rehabilitate, to rebuild, and to start again. All right, we'll stop over here. We'll Amir Tashem spend next week on Kapitel Nat Nun Gimel as well.